Well, it finally happened. Randy Orton is your new WWE champion. Your full Hell in a Cell review with YouTube's The Botch Guy comes your way right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast, and welcome to your full Hell in a Cell review with YouTube's The Botch Guy. This is going to be a fun one. It was a blast talking with him, as always. His energy is unmatched, let me tell you that. You know, I'm more of a low-key guy. He seems to be a little bit on the other spectrum. That's a good thing, because he brings my energy up sometimes when I am starting to lose a little bit of that flair in my voice. He seems to bring me up, and that's a great thing. I'm glad to be talking to him tonight. One of the best YouTube has to offer in terms of wrestling content and authentic wrestling analysis and everything else that goes with it. So subscribe. If you don't know where to find him, again, YouTube, right? Search out The Botch Guy, click subscribe, and you're done. So you're doing yourself a favor, and I appreciate all the listeners who have come here to listen to us talk. And those that have come from his stream and coming here for the first time, welcome. This is going to be a collaboration for a very long time. I think that we mesh well, and I hope you guys enjoy the show. But we're going to get going in just a minute. I got a couple of voicemails to get into, but there's a ton to cover with The Botch Guy. And yes, Randy Orton becoming WWE champion, probably front and center, although there are many other stories coming your way that are of equal importance, I think, including the Roman Reigns deal, right? Roman Reigns and Jey Uso. The slowest match in terms of pacing in the last 10 years, but I explain why that's a good thing. And so there's so much to get to, and we're going to get to all of it, but let's get through these voicemails. I have a couple of left in the bank that I did not get to the other night, and I want to get to them now. And by the way, if you have a Hell in a Cell thought, review, rant, whatever it is, you got 3 minutes or less to do it, but you can call us 518-952-0247. That's 518-952-0247. That's how you get in touch with the show. You can rant, whatever you'd like. Keep it PG, please. But that's really it. Talk about anything you want wrestling related. Okay, so let's get to that first voicemail right now.
Hey, Matt. It's Jim in New York. Hell in a Cell is this Sunday, so for the third straight month, I'm calling to give you my reasons why I think Drew McIntyre is going to beat Randy Orton this weekend. I know you have a different opinion, but you did say you like getting those different opinions. So, reason number one, I think they're building McIntyre up to be the next guy. I compared this recently in one of my voicemails to the Batista Triple H program back in 2005, where Batista beat him 3 straight pay-per-views, ending in a Hell in a Cell. It really put Batista on the map, and I think they're doing the same thing here with McIntyre. Read somewhere a couple of days ago that Triple H basically said WWE is grooming Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre to be the next Hogan, Flair, or Austin Rock, and I know your recent podcast said you heard the same thing from Vince. So whether you, I, or any other fans agree with that or not is inconsequential. The fact is WWE believes that. So I think they're going with McIntyre. Reason number two, the draft. Raw drafted both McIntyre and Orton. They're my two favorite wrestlers, but even I'm done with this program. They have to end it at Hell in a Cell. I don't understand how they can have Drew give Orton opportunity after opportunity, and then Orton's going to win it and not have a rematch. Just doesn't make sense. If they do go with a rematch and Orton wins, then how do you follow up an ambulance match and a Hell in a Cell match with a regular wrestling match at Survivor Series of all places? So, you know, they're going with a Raw versus SmackDown type thing. I think Drew versus Roman would be better. Reason number three, again with the draft, looking ahead, I was hoping to get the following guys from SmackDown for Drew to defend the title against if he were to win. Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman, Sheamus because of their history together, and AJ Styles. They didn't get one of them. They got all four. And I know they're going with Bray as a face now probably, but to have the other three, to me, is great for Drew. And number four is trumps all the other three, and it's a tried and true reverse momentum theory. Four Raws leading into the pay-per-view of the first one. Orton beats the crap out of the the Legends, Advantage Orton. Raw 2, they had a six-man match. Orton pins McIntyre for the first time in almost a year. That was the kicker for me. Raw 3, they were kind of just battling all over the arena. No real advantage. And Raw 4, God, could they have said any more how Drew has never been in a Hell in a Cell, and this will be Orton's eighth. And Orton gives a promo. This is where I beat Sheamus. This is where I beat Cena, whatever. They're really trying to get you to believe that Orton has a huge advantage. And usually whoever has the advantage in these Raws loses, in my opinion. So, interested to hear your take. Again, I appreciate the platform you give us to give our opinions. And listen again. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Jim. So kind of awkward, right? Kind of awkward that this voicemail pops up as I'm doing the review. Unfortunately, knowing the results, it's hard for me to respond when we all know what the outcome is. So it's a little unfair. I will say good reasoning. I mean, we all know that Drew was not successful, but you provided a very good case as to why he should be. And I actually thought he would. And, you know, I chose Randy Orton the last two pay-per-views to win. And then I go with Drew on the one that he loses. So I am 0-3 on picking the Randy Orton, Drew McIntyre matches in terms of who's going to win. So do not listen to me, or you know what? Just do the opposite of what I tell you, and you know that's what's going to happen as far as my predictions go. So, Jim, thank you again for your well-thought-out reasoning why Drew should retain and what signals WWE is sending us to tell us who they're going with, what guy. And you know what? I think Drew is still the guy. You know, I think Drew is still the guy they're going with. Just because he's in chase mode now doesn't mean that he's not still the guy. He had a very formidable run from April, beginning of April, until the end of October now. So we're almost 7 months where he had a really sustainable, memorable run. So I don't think there's anything to be taken away from that. But yeah, I mean, it is surprising. It certainly is surprising. And again, don't go with what I predict with Drew and Orton. I just can't do it. So Jim, thanks so much. And let's get to that next voicemail.
Hey, Matt, it's Brad from Pennsylvania. Usually I give you a question or a comment, but today I'm going to give you a little rant. I was going to call you on Tuesday rant, but I figured I'd stew over it for the week and then give you one for your weekend review. So here it goes. The draft, they completely ruined the draft already. I mean, you had Otis on Raw, clearly. I don't care if you had a mask on. And you also had the Riot Squad on Raw. Then for some reason, the faction that you built up for, what, 2-3 months, maybe even longer, you had the Fiend squash the entire faction in 30 seconds flat. Dominic Dijakovic is done. He's buried. He's completely buried. You could take the mask off him, you could put a different mask on him, whatever you do, he's buried. He got tapped out by Bobby Lashley, and then 2 minutes later, he's getting the mandible claw by the team. He's buried. The whole entire faction might as well be buried. I think it's a joke. They should cancel that, just like they canceled Raw Underground. Then, I hate seeing Lacey Evans being wasted. Then you put a tag team with her and Peyton Royce. So you broke up the Iconics to have Peyton Royce be in a tag team with Lacey Evans, which was super annoying, the way they were trying to one-up each other. I just found it to be childish and annoying, not what I wanted to see, especially from someone I like, because I happen to like Lacey Evans. I think she's awesome in the ring. Her gimmick is horrible, but in ring, she's awesome. As a person, she's awesome. She did a cameo for my daughter. It was real cool. Made her day. But anyway, I hate seeing her being wasted. Let's see, where else could I even go? Since week in review, I could hit on SmackDown, like the whole Lars Sullivan being back. I can't stand it. Don't even like to see him. I think they should put pants on him. He just looks weird with those underwear that say Lars. Just weird, especially when you have the thought of what he's been into. Never mind. I'm just going to move on from there, but yeah, I don't know. I love what they're doing with Roman. I think I've mentioned that to you before. Other than that, not really too happy about a lot of things that are going on. I like Drew and Randy, but I'm kind of tired of it. I've had enough, and I didn't really need to see them do battle before the pay-per-view. One thing I wanted to touch on, though, is the Bayley and Sasha Hell in a Cell match. A lot of people are commenting on it and what they think is going to happen, but don't forget.
Hey, Brad. So, you reached that three-minute mark, and that's why you got cut off mid-sentence. But thank you so much. Again, you just like the previous caller, you guys definitely put some thought into this. You know, you definitely have a passion for the product, and I do appreciate that because we share that same passion. That's why we're here. That's why we listen to wrestling podcasts. So thank you so much, Brad, from Pennsylvania. Hope everything is going well for you. I'm with you on the whole retribution thing. I don't even need to get into that of how they were just buried on night one. I'm totally with you. Sasha and Bayley, well, again, it's a little unfair for me to pump these voicemails out knowing the result, but very curious to hear yours and Jim's, the previous caller, your thoughts on Hell in a Cell, because I really want to know, now that we know the results, now that we know the direction we're going, what do you think about it, right? So please call in and let me know. All right, let's get to that final voicemail. And then we're going to get to the Botch Guy and the full Hell in a Cell review.
Good afternoon. This is Anthony. Hey, you like to go on rants and whatnot and talk about how logistically things just don't seem to, you know, perpetuate and, you know, turn into something that makes chronological sense, you know, and... this retribution, I mean, come on. Well, that's it. That's all I got on retribution. That's all they deserve. Love you. Bye.
Actually, had, oh my God, that actually had me laughing through your voicemail. I have never had anybody call and just talk about retribution saying, come on, man. That, I mean, I don't know if you got that from Joe Biden or you just literally believe that they only are deserving of that phrase. That's awesome. That is one of the best voicemails I've gotten. Just great. Thanks so much for your opinion. Well stated, well put, very eloquently laid out, and much appreciated. Alrighty, everybody, let's get to it. The Botch Guy and I covered Hell in a Cell pay-per-view that just went off the air about an hour ago, as I record this anyway, so it will be available for you. Well, probably when you wake up, right? Like, because you're listening to it now. So, all right, everyone, thanks so much, and let's get to it. I'll be back on Tuesday with your Monday Night Raw review and kind of Hell in a Cell wrap-up, and then Wednesday's nostalgia, and you know the rest of the week is normal schedule. So let's get to it. Thanks, everyone, and I'll talk to you soon. All right, everyone, welcome to the official Hell in a Cell review, and guess who's back? None other than the Botch Guy. We seem to be teaming up now for every single pay-per-view. That's probably will be going an ongoing thing. He's one of the most, definitely most passionate co-hosts that I have on my co-host roster, so to speak. And it's great to have him back. If you haven't checked out the channel, I don't know what you're doing. You got to go. I've been telling you guys that for weeks and weeks. Definitely one of the most entertaining, passionate, authentic wrestling channels out there. So and fastest growing. So welcome back, man.
Hey, man, thanks. I thanks for putting me on the main card. I appreciate that. And and no also, that's a hell of an introduction, man. I think I might use that for one of my YouTube intros. But yeah, man, I appreciate it. That's really nice of you. Also, don't sell yourself short, man. This is probably the best WWE or unofficial WWE podcast out there when it comes to talking about wrestling. I just love your passion. I love the fire you guys have, all the people that you guys have working with you. And I do appreciate you having me on, and if the people that do want to check out my channel, I am the Botch Guy. You can find me on YouTube. Just type me in, then you'll find me. I do different reactions and parodies and stuff like that, and yeah, I'm happy to be here, buddy.
Awesome. No, it's an honor to have you here, and I'm glad we're here, because this is a pay-per-view that we were talking a little bit off the air here, that this is one of the better pay-per-views. You said that this, to you, was the best pay-per-view of the year, so... explain why. I mean, you don't have to go into every match, but just kind of as an overview, why was this the best match of the year for you, or best pay-per-view of the year?
Honestly, overall, I'm pretty critical about the product in recent years. And overall this year, I've been pretty critical as a whole with a lot of their pay-per-views. I feel like there's always too many matches, too many filler matches. I feel like the matches don't live up to the hype, or they don't have proper finishes. Like, nothing drives me nuts than a Hell in a Cell match, you know, not having a proper Hell in a Cell match actual finish, right? And with the matches today and with the lead-ups and the storylines and the build and just the overall passion and energy that the wrestlers seem to have and the performances overall and the storytelling, man, the storytelling tonight, like we'll get into it pretty heavily with the Roman Reigns stuff and Jey Uso and the Randy stuff, but man, I thought the storytelling is just incredible. And guys, if you guys don't know, I'm overly critical about pay-per-views so far in the WWE, but not this one. In my personal opinion, this is my favorite pay-per-view of the year.
That is strong, and especially considering that it's now October, and you're going even back to the Royal Rumble where Edge made his return,
correct,
and people lost their freaking minds. Still one of the best pops I've heard in like 15 years. I mean, that was absolutely amazing. But so to compare it to a moment like that and every other pay-per-view that we've had, and yes, this year is a little bit different with the whole COVID era, I guess is what we're going to call it, with all the pay-per-views being done, most of them without fans. So, but still, this was, and I will say, I don't know if it's the best pay-per-view of the year. I'd put it in my top three, particularly for the reason that you mentioned about less matches. When it's there's fewer uh-huh. matches, that means that each one means more, and you give them more time to tell a story. And I think that another kind of overarching theme for the pay-per-view was that, yeah, the storytelling was good, but how do they do it? Well, they slowed down. It's amazing when you slow down in a match that we're so used to seeing these 100-mile-an-hour matches and just move after move after move after move after counter, that when you slow the hell down, you can actually understand what's happening and you can process it in your brain and you can feel what they're feeling. It's amazing when you just slow down. And that's what we got. The fans got a beneficiary of tonight on top of great performances and effort and everything else like that. So, but I do want to jump right in here to Jey Uso versus Roman Reigns, which opened the pay-per-view. When I was very surprised that they opened the pay-per-view with this match. I can't remember the last time a championship match of this caliber was opening a pay-per-view, perhaps AJ Styles versus John Cena at SummerSlam a couple of years ago that opened the show. That's the only time I can remember. But I'll toss it to you. What did you think about this match?
I'll be completely honest. I know this is going to sound kind of crazy, but probably my top five favorite match of the entire year. I loved it. I loved the storytelling. I loved how it started pretty slow with the spears and some of the suicide dives. I love how they started using the straps and how Jey Uso was kind of like ramping up some of his moves. I love the whole Roman Reigns trash talking in the middle of the ring. I just love when I said this on my live stream, and I'll tell you, my friend. Listen, I am a huge fan of people that find their initial, original, proper characters, something that you will always remember. The Rock, you know who The Rock is. Stone Cold, you know who Stone Cold is. The Undertaker, you know who The Undertaker is. CM Punk. These guys have natural characters that you can say, yes, that's who they are. The Tribal Chief, Roman Reigns, this is the Roman Reigns we have been waiting for. This is it. This is his character for life. I will never look at him as anybody different. I know people like the Shield, Roman Reigns. No, in my opinion, this is the one. I think his mannerisms, the way he talks and his promos in the middle of the ring, I just loved it. And I'll talk a little more about it, but I want to get your initial thoughts on the first half of the match. What did you feel?
Well, that is actually what I said to myself out loud. I actually said it to myself. I go, this is what, it's exactly almost what I said verbatim, that this is what we have been, and I've been waiting for, and that WWE is probably saying to themselves, oh man, we've been missing out on this for 6 years. Now we see what the fans wanted. Yeah. I mean, like, this is what I've wanted. I have been a big proponent, as many have, of turning him heel. And this is even better than I could have imagined of a character that he would have presented as the heel. And he doesn't feel like he's playing a robotic, corporately packaged babyface anymore. He feels like he's just going out there and being a D-bag and just being who he is. He doesn't feel like he's hiding anything. The whole Shield thing was, it was always like a mask. He felt phony. He always felt phony to me. And it's why I never connected with him. So the first half of this match, I agree. Like the trash talking, the spear, and then there was like minutes in between the next move. It was just incredible. And yeah, the off mic type of interactions, when things are caught on the camera's mic and not when they're holding a microphone, it makes it feel that much more important. Like, are we supposed to hear this? It makes it like very, you organic. Listen closer. You listen closer than you would in a typical promo. And it was very well done. The pacing, again, was just magnificent in this match. But the first half was brilliant. I mean, what about the rest of it? Did you enjoy the outcome? Go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. There's like a 1 second lag here. So just to let you guys know what. that's also my perfect excuse to use if I ever interrupt you. So
there's a 1 second lag. I'm air quoting right now. Yeah.
All right. Whatever. Anyway, so the second half was even better. Like I loved. By the way, that second spear. I don't know what it was about it, but like he had one arm down, and when he hit that second spear, it felt so much more satisfying. I don't know what it was, but I don't know, man. Like, it kept on ramping up the trash talking, you know, the straps were used and all that lovely stuff. And then Jimmy came out, you know, after, you know, Jay's just getting destroyed by Roman Reigns. Jimmy came out and he's like, what are you doing, man? What are you doing? I will say this, Matt. I think a lot of the trash talking we hear in the ring is because there's no crowd there. And I think we can literally just hear it. And I think the WWE is kind of pushing that. I think that's definitely a part of it. I don't say all of it, but I think it's a part of it. And I just love the ending. Like, I thought the ending made so much sense. Jay wouldn't give up. So you have Jimmy out there. Let him take the abuse. And Jay, you know, gives up to save his bro. I thought it was just beautiful. And I love the fact that he came out. And, you know, they had the head of the tables out there. The official tribal chief now, Roman Reigns. And I loved it, man. I'm telling you, I just loved it. What did you think?
I really can't say enough about it. And it's amazing how we're praising this match so much when it's really not the moves that we're worried about. It's the story. And that, to me, is what the essence of wrestling is always, the story. It will always supersede wrestling's moves and counters and all these crazy 450 splashes and suicide dives. This is what pro wrestling is, because it makes you feel something. The other kind of stuff is like fireworks. Like, it's like, oh, what's the next one? What's the next one? What's the next one? Like, it's not intrinsically satisfying. It's just very externally satisfying to most people. But this is when people don't understand wrestling, like, this is a perfect example to show them of why we like wrestling. And Roman Reigns just being able to, on a dime, start shedding tears and saying, you know, this isn't who I am, and kind of feigning like he's going to go back to the light and see the light, and he's going to shake hands with Jimmy, everything's going to be okay, and bam, he puts him in a get the name of his finish.
I guess the guillotine, right?
Yeah. So puts him in that, and then we have Jay say, I quit, out of saving his brother. And what also I think is underrated is Paul Heyman's reaction as Roman Reigns is walking up the ramp, of just like pure shock, but kind of hesitation and being a little bit hesitant to even get near him. Paul Heyman's facials are also just, I mean, he's always great, but that I think is an underrated part of Paul Heyman. We all know he's a good promo, but it's also his facials that he gave Roman Reigns and standing there and just showed you another level of Roman Reigns's character. Like, he's willing to do anything. If he would do this to his family, to disrespect his family, to banish them and to make it about himself, that he is the head of the table, that everyone needs to acknowledge and respect him. I mean, this was just damn brilliant from start to finish. I love this.
And Matt, do you feel like Paul Heyman is, you know, behind the scenes teaching him a lot of this, like, mannerisms and the way, like, the facials work and stuff like that? Because I feel, I don't know if it's just a heel turn character as a whole, or if Paul Heyman behind the scenes is be like, listen, if you do this, this, and that, like, you're just going to elevate yourself to a new level. And we did talk off air here a little bit about the potential match in the future. A potential absolutely colossal match. You wanna say it?
Well, I mean, I've talked about it a little bit before here, but I don't know how The Rock doesn't somehow get involved at some point by WrestleMania. I know that people would say, oh, well, Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns is going to be the WrestleMania main event, and it very well may be. But I could see this absolutely becoming a Rock versus Roman Reigns story. I mean, the story now writes itself. You've got Roman Reigns as a heel, which is a perfect role for him. He's getting involved with his family and disrespecting his family, and it's all about being the head of the table. How does The Rock not come in and save the day for the family and try to knock some sense into Roman Reigns? It's just, it really writes itself, but it all comes down to The Rock's schedule, the timing, what are their plans for Drew McIntyre versus Roman Reigns? When do they want to do that? Like, does it involve a championship? There's so many things to work out, but I think it's possible. I give it 50-50. What do you think?
Oh, I'm praying. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I have never been so excited for a potential actual logical match in a long time. I don't know if it's going to happen, like you said, the scheduling and everything with Dwayne Johnson, but can you imagine the Tribal Chief matchup with the whole family involvement, and you have The Rock as a natural face going against now Roman Reigns, who, let's say it, he is a natural heel. And I think it would be some of the most ridiculous ratings the WWE needs so badly, because they have struggled a little bit recently. And I think it would just be insane, man.
It would be. Definitely would bring eyeballs to the product more than in the past. And yeah, to answer your question, too, about Paul Heyman, you know, did he have an influence behind the scenes? I think absolutely. Look, Roman Reigns had 4 months to sit at home, train, go through his creative. I would assume that they probably told Roman as soon as they decided to go with the heel turn that, hey, we're going to turn you heel. And Paul Heyman and you are going to be working on like a daily basis of, you know, what is your character? What do you want to be? Long-term plan this. You know, look the part. What do you want to do to change your outfit? Like, they went through this, and they had 4 months to prepare. There was nothing rushing Roman Reigns back. So the fact that there was really no urgency to get him back, and we all kind of wrote him off until SummerSlam, was really a benefit to be able to prepare for so long. And it wasn't just on a whim that Vince decided, you know, showing up to the show and tearing up the script and rewriting everything. It was very meticulously planned out. And yeah, I can't say enough about this match. It is storytelling at its finest when you do have time and you pace yourself and it's a heel in a proper role. It's great. Do you have any final thoughts on this match?
No, I just love it as a wrestling fan. I love storytelling. It made me feel a little extra passionate for the wrestling product as a whole, and I'll take that any day of the week.
And it's easily WWE's best story they have right now. It's not even close. Maybe so it's awesome. This is really, really good stuff. Okay, on to something that I mean, I'll be honest, I kind of feel really indifferent about it, and I don't even know if this was deserving of being on the pay-per-view, just because it didn't have a great story behind it. And this is what I'm talking about, is Elias versus Jeff Hardy, which is what was next. This is kind of like the take you down to bring you back up match. I hate to say that, but what is the story here? That Elias feels that Jeff Hardy's the one that ran him down 5 months ago in the parking lot at the Performance Center, when we all know it was Sheamus? Did he not watch the product over the last 5 months to know that it was really Sheamus who's the one that was driving? Yeah, I know that Corey Graves said, well, we never really got a definitive answer on who did it. Yeah, well, it was Sheamus. I mean, like, so if he really, I mean, it's ridiculous. He had red hair, whatever. So, okay. So this match, I mean, I don't have much to talk about here. It was just kind of like your standard SmackDown match. I mean, it didn't feel like a pay-per-view. It didn't feel anything for this match. I honestly just felt neutral. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It's kind of there. How did you feel?
Matt, I appreciate you going so in-depth about the storyline with this Elias and Jeff Hardy. You all know what I took out of this match? Elias, his new entrance theme is his song Amen from his new album. That's
good catch.
Only thing I honestly got out of that match. It was a prototypical 100% filler match. You know, it's exactly what you said. It's a match to cool down before some more bigger matches, bigger spots. This was not one of my favorite matches on the card. But you know what? I feel like you do have to have some of these kind of calm matches before you kind of ramp up, because people will kind of lose interest if they're always at the high. You know, you got to kind of go down, and that's exactly what it was. New entrance song.
Wow. There you go. That tells you all you need to know, if that's all you took from this, was the new entrance song, and that WWE just continues to play on the whole Jeff Hardy gets DUIs and he had an alcohol problem, because we had Elias sing about it. I mean, there were some funny lines in there, but it's getting a little tired of them just constantly hammering home about Jeff Hardy. Yeah, we all know his DUI history, okay. But anyway, okay, moving on to something that is a little more substance, and that is The Miz versus Otis, where the winner gets the Money in the Bank contract. Before I say anything, you take this. What did you think?
You know, it's hard to talk about the actual match itself. I thought the match was fine. I didn't think it was anything spectacular. I thought it had a couple of fun little spots, but more of the usual stuff we saw. I will talk about the main part of the match, and that was, yes, Tucker turns heel on Otis, hits him with the briefcase there, and The Miz is now officially the new Money in the Bank contract holder, and this is absolutely massive implications moving forward. I will say this, moving up on the storyline, I'm not sure, but honestly, I didn't personally like the way they set all this up. I thought it wasn't done all too well. I don't like the fact that this is how a Money in the Bank contract can actually get traded off, but you know what? Tucker turning heel, something that was talked about on this show, was talked about on my show, and it's something that we've been talking about, and it's nice to see him finally evolving that character. But what does Otis do now? Like, hey, Otis, so what do you think about this? Hey, Tucky, why'd you turn on me there? Where's my ham? All right, anyway. So
I knew it. Yeah, go
ahead. All right, so what do you think, man? What do you think about the big Tucker heel turn there?
Agreed that the match itself doesn't really matter. I don't mean that disrespectfully to the guys, but it wasn't necessarily about the quality of the match. It was never about, like, oh, they're going to have a great match. No, it was just a means to an end to get The Miz the Money in the Bank contract. They've been building this for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, it feels like, and they've been trying to get it off of him, of which I suspect it's from fan backlash that they probably realized they made a mistake at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view 5 months ago. You know, they didn't plan this from, 5 months from now, we'll give it to The Miz. No, they just realized that they're getting consistently bad feedback from Otis from the fans. There's no other reason.
Do you mind if I interrupt you real quick?
Yeah, go.
I will say this. I personally feel they gave Otis the Money in the Bank contract, mostly because for some reason, I don't think the people in the WWE thought this pandemic was maybe going to go as long as it has. Maybe they thought maybe it wasn't going to be as serious, maybe. And they thought there'd be a crowd back when by the time Otis is pretty much ready to kind of cash it in. And I feel like it delayed it. And the fact that it delayed it. And, you know, obviously the world's still, you know, not quite there yet. I feel like they just said, you know, screw it, we'll just give it to somebody else.
It could be, it could be, but I would also say that, well, it's been 5 months. You've still got 7 months to go before actually have to legally cash it in. You're not even halfway through the whole Money in the Bank requirement. So I think it could be partly that, but I think it is mostly fan backlash. Otherwise, fans would be excited. WWE would not take a briefcase like that off of somebody that the fans were like, oh, I can't wait till he cashes in. Who is he going to cash in? Oh, my God.
Yeah,
they would not kill it dead like that. But it could be very well the whole pandemic. A lot of things are probably the pandemic, but this match was, again, it's not about the match. Tucker turning heel was the big key here. Yes, The Miz got the briefcase, but to me, I think what's even bigger is Tucker turning heel, because he's the most relevant he's been, and I actually can see this making sense of why he did what he did, because Otis always made it about himself. He was the reason that they lost several matches. Without Tucker, which is what he said after the match, without Tucker, he would have not been able to get Mandy Rose. All these different things that Tucker made total sense, that it's always been about Otis. It's never been about the team. But to be fair, the Heavy Machinery has never even gotten a fair shake in the tag division. They split them up before they could even get a title opportunity. So this to me is Tucker finally gets the spotlight where it takes it off of Otis, and I'm interested to see where they go with this, whether they put Tucker over or they put Otis over. I think will be telling when they have that match eventually.
Oh, you have to put Tucker over, because it's if a person turns and he doesn't kind of go over with his, you know, new gimmick, I feel like it loses so much impact. I feel like, look at Retribution, for example. Oh my God, I can make like a 1 hour rant on Retribution. We'll probably talk about them a little bit later on in the stream, but I feel like Tucker has to be the one. I think Otis, you know, he doesn't really need the wins now, especially without him not having the money in the bank. I think he's just a comedy character right now, and WWE kind of turned him into that.
No, they have. I mean, I've spoken at that at length about how when Vince saw him as the funny guy, he saw him a big, you know, his big tummy, and then they said, "Oh, how funny would that be?" Putting him out there every week in a size, a women's tee, and having him out there just shaking his belly and doing gyrations with his hips and all these things that it completely delegitimizes him. I mean, you can do those things occasionally, and he was getting over organically without Vince, and then when Vince put his fingerprints on it, the fans were like, "Ugh, what is he doing?" Right? Everything he did during the Money in the Bank briefcase match, he was in a cafeteria getting food. He's always backstage eating a ham. Like, God knows what they're going to do for Thanksgiving in a month. I mean, I'm sure he'll be in a gravy bowl match or something like that. Like, you just know they're going to do something ridiculous.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. I mean, but they really have taken what the fans loved about Otis, that he's kind of this lovable oaf that can still go in the ring. He's very charismatic, and then Vince goes, "Oh, we're pulling him out of that team. We're making him a single star." And that's where the fans went, well, what Vince envisioned is not what I wanted. So now Otis has lost the girl to Raw. He's lost the Money in the Bank briefcase, and now he's lost his tag partner. So certainly he has had a big fall from grace.
Otis, the character, I feel like the fans would get. He's definitely one of those characters that if you have a crowd, I feel like it works towards his advantage than if there is no actual crowd there. Like, you know how Randy Orton, you don't really need a crowd there because he's so good at talking and trash talking and his mannerism. Same with Roman, kind of. I feel like Otis is one of those characters that actually really got hurt by the lack of a crowd.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think he is one that his character really, really needs that fan interaction. Without it, yeah, I agree. I mean, I know they can pump in the crowd noise now, and they're loving being able to control everything that happens and how everything should be reacted to. So I can't wait till I can actually have, you know, a few thousand fans in an arena and see what WWE's been up to and get a true reaction. Not from the NXT robot fans, not from the people at home that really don't have a voice, not from social media, which is not always a true indication of how fans are reacting in an arena. But anyway, so yeah, The Miz now has the contract. Final question on this match: who does he cash it in on? Because when you look at this, it's a heel Roman Reigns and a heel Drew McIntyre. So, like, who does he go after, right?
He has to wait. Simple as that. Unless he plans to lose, honestly, he has to wait because, like you said, there's two heels right now. It doesn't make any logical sense out of any of these guys. Maybe I'm thinking about after WrestleMania sometime, maybe do something fun like that with the cash in. But there's not really much to do with The Miz and the contract right now either, to be honest. And I feel like he just has to wait. I don't think it's going to be against either of these guys, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's got some time before he has to legally cash it in. So
7 months, right?
Yeah, 7 months. So certainly enough time to have Roman possibly drop it and then Miz try to cash in on the babyface. So, all right. So beyond that, we then get another huge match here with Sasha Banks and Bayley inside the Hell in a Cell for the SmackDown Women's Championship. My quick thoughts on this. It was physical. I had a feeling it would be physical. Sasha just seems to not care about her own body. That's a compliment. I mean, she puts herself, there were some spots there where I go, oh my God, like I'm waiting for them to put up the X, you know, like when I mean, seriously, like there were some spots where Sasha's face hit that steel step so fast and the referee came over and, you know, she gave him the signal squeezing his hand that I'm fine. But I was waiting for the X. I mean, they did a great job of making you believe in most of their spots that it was truly hurting. And yeah, there were lots of kendo sticks, and WWE seems to have this fascination lately with kendo sticks. I mean, between Dominic and Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy, that whole storyline. And any time that, I mean, I think all three matches inside the cell used a kendo stick, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe not Randy and Drew, but certainly they have a love for kendo sticks right now. But these women brought it. It was a long match. It felt very long, and maybe that's my only critique. It did drag a little bit at spots, but you know, Sasha winning was surprising to me because of the fact that this is truly their first match. I know they had a match on SmackDown. I don't really count that. This is their first true match that we've been waiting for the blow-off for 6 months of them building this up, maybe longer, and Sasha wins. It's I'm not against it. I'm just surprised that they've done it, because typically the heel will win maybe the first time, maybe the babyface wins the second time, and then the babyface wins the third time to go get through the rematch. So that'll probably be the story going into the next pay-per-view at Survivor Series of Sasha's never successfully defended a women's championship, so can she successfully defend it against Bayley, who assumingly will get a rematch at Survivor Series. So what did you think about this match?
Honestly, I rewinded that chair spot, the one that you thought that potentially could get an X, and man, Sasha sold it so well. Oh my God, she sold it so well. It looked like she got like torpedoed into that corner, into that chair, but actually didn't hit her head. She actually put her hands up pretty quickly, so it was pretty nice there. It was just really well done. I thought the match was awesome. I agree 100% wholeheartedly that it started a little bit too slow. I do like the fact that they ramp up. I'm always a sucker for ramping matches up. This happens very often, a lot of big matches where you kind of start off slow and then it ramps, then it gets to a nice conclusion. I'm a big fan of it. I love when they do stuff like that, but I do agree there are some parts I was like, okay, they can kind of, you know, move on to some of the bigger spots of the match. With the kendo stick stuff, I was laughing because I literally was thinking the same thing. I'm like, my God, like every match seems to have a kendo stick nowadays. Yeah. I will say this. I think maybe it's because of the impact of a kendo stick. I don't know about you, man, but when a person gets hit with a chair in the back, it doesn't feel like it hurts as much as, like, say, a kendo stick where he gets hit in the chest or in the back, because you just know it's going to leave a mark. There was an interview with one of the older WWE wrestlers. I forgot. Can't come up with the name right now. I do apologize, but he basically said, like, what hurts the most out of every single weapon? And he said 100% kendo sticks. So I definitely agree with that. I feel like it definitely adds some impact. And as the match gone on, you know, I thought they had some nice movements with the backstabber and the bank statement type stuff that happened middle of the match. And then they kind of had the fire extinguisher spot, which was pretty funny because that right before that, Bayley kind of botched on the outside with the two kendo sticks, trying to create something with the tape. But she couldn't do it.
What the hell was that? Like, what was the eventual end game of that? Like, what?
She just wanted to throw her in there. I don't know.
But you didn't need that. I don't know. That was bizarre.
You know, unfortunately, I want to, like, plug my thing, my channel, and be like, go to my channel and check out that botch. But I actually can't do pay-per-view botches, unfortunately. But but yeah, man, it was a fantastic little hilarious moment there. And then the ending with the chair, I agree. I feel really confused a little bit on Sasha Banks winning. I thought it was going to be Bayley wins the first one, has a big setup, boom, Sasha wins the next one. But no, Sasha right off the bat takes it. And it was satisfying. It was a very satisfying end or of this kind of ramp up for this big match, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and you know what? It was satisfying. I was willing to wait a little longer to get that satisfaction. Maybe I'm more patient than some wrestling fans. That's not better or worse. It's just I like the long story arcs. I'm willing to wait for that delayed satisfaction, the delayed gratification, rather. So, if I booked it, I probably would have had Bayley win. But look, Sasha winning is fine. And the way she won was brutal. It was exactly what it needed to be, putting her in the bank statement with the chair wrapped around her neck and then kicking the chair so that it continued to, like, wrench her neck. It was great. And the post-match look of Bayley was she was just completely just disheveled in that chair. Sasha didn't even look at the championship for, like, a good minute or two. She just enjoyed the view of Bayley being dismembered in that chair. It was a great visual. These two certainly are probably going to wake up tomorrow morning barely, you know, being able to get out of bed. I'm sure they're sore as hell. And, you know, really just hats off to both women. I really don't have anything bad to say about this match other than the fact that, yeah, it was a little bit long in spots. Yeah. But if that's my worst complaint, then they're doing pretty damn good. So.
Hey, Matt, I'm happy you mentioned the kicking with the chair because I believe it might have happened on WWE, but I believe that's a throwback to an NXT match that Sasha Banks was kicking the chair. Was that against Bayley? The throwback with the big kicking spot with the submission at the very end. And I loved it. I thought it added some serious impact. And when I meant satisfying, I meant more like the match itself was really good. I agree 100% that they should have probably not had Sasha win the title just yet. But, you know, the match was good, you know? And, you know, we're just going to disagree with what the WWE does. And I don't think it was the worst decision, but I don't think it was the best one either. I think it was fine. You know, it's fine. Just fine.
And I think what they were trying to do, too, was balance out the night as well. I know that it's a little bit short-sighted to balance out the night by having a big title change of this magnitude. But when you look at what happened at the rest of the night, you know, this was kind of like, all right, we need to make sure we put smiles on people's faces at least once during the night. And so that could have been a little bit of it as well. So, okay, well, on to the next match here. And, boy, I have a feeling this one is not going to be a long analysis, but it may turn into a rant. So I'm going to step back and I'm going to ask you, what did you think about Slapjack, whoever the hell he is, versus Bobby Lashley for the United States Championship? Yeah, Retribution is here, and they had a match against Bobby Lashley and have yet to win a match, by the way. So go ahead.
You know, I'm not sure if you know, but backstage in the promo, I feel like Shelton Benjamin actually had a bit of a botch because he was talking about how, like, you're going to face the silly one with the mask. And then he looked at Cedric Alexander, and he dropped an F-bomb on him, and he's like secretly, I'm not sure if you noticed
that.
See that. And then he looked, like, really embarrassed, right? Because I just thought, like, he wasn't supposed to say something like that because they all have masks or whatever. But anyways, the match, it was fine. It was an okay match, but that's not the problem, right? The problem is, first of all, Hurt Business should never be going against Retribution members ever. Like this, I still don't understand this double heel thing. But the Retribution, can I just call them jobbers? Like, can I call them jobbers? Like, can I honestly call them jobbers? They are. They're jobbers.
Yes.
They come out, they lose, they don't look tough, they don't look intimidating. They're sending all these messages, even on Twitter. Mustafa Ali is like going on there on Twitter saying, "Oh, this is our moment. We're gonna do this," and then they get jobbed out. And then Ali, like, they have this mini attack, and then Bobby Lashley's actually taking them all out. Like, no joke. Bobby was starting to take them all out, 1v4, 5, whatever. And then Hurt Business kind of start coming out, and Mustafa Ali looks like he saw John Cena. Like, seriously, looks like he saw a ghost. And all of a sudden, he just runs away. And I'm thinking, what? What is this? Like, what is this group? Like, they are so buried from what they're supposed to be already. It's unbelievable. I have zero interest in Retribution. The only thing I care about Retribution is their theme song. I feel like they have a good entrance music. And that's about it. Like, I'm choked about what they're doing here. Guys, remember the bathroom spot, Matt? Come on. Like, oh my God, man. I'm so frustrated. Your turn.
God. I'm really, and those that have been listening to me for a while, I'm going to really try not to go on the same rant that I've been ranting about for like weeks and weeks now about this group, how it really makes no sense or even here. The biggest problem I have with Retribution, there's many things. The biggest thing I have, not only... Does WWE just they showcase them, they destroy all their stuff, they attack their fans, even though they were NXT trainees, fine, but they attack their fans, they slice up their ring ropes, they attack the production team and their truck, they attack the announcers, they go backstage, they throw cylinder blocks through windows, they overturn the cars, they throw Molotov cocktails at Transformers. And what does WWE do? Well, they award them contracts. They say, hey, Gary, hey guys, here's our money, right? They say, hey, nice job, here's our money. And it's ridiculous that they even have contracts. That was never explained to us. How do they get contracts when they're not even supposed to be here and they're causing thousands of dollars worth of damage in your building? And I've made this analogy. That would be like the equivalent of me going into Apple, destroying their phones, throwing their iPads around, overturning their tables week after week after week. And then one week I walk in and they're like, hey, listen, will you just stop if I give you a, you know, if we employ you? Like, it's that analogy. Like, it makes no sense. So not only are they – that does it not make sense for them to be here, but now they're not even giving it an effort for them to even try to make this a success, because you have on Raw, they lose their tag match. They get manhandled by The Fiend single-handedly. They have not won a match, and now Slapjack Flapjack ends up losing to Bobby Lashley. And he almost took out Retribution on his own as well. This is the most haphazard, terrible execution of a group that I've ever seen in my life. The only bright spot is probably Mustafa Ali's promo that was on Monday night. Like, that was the only thing that made any kind of sense. And yeah, he's the hacker. Fine. They wrapped up that storyline, which I guarantee was just a, oh yeah, that storyline's hanging out there. It kind of makes sense. You'd be the hacker. Let's just wrap it up. But outside of his promo, I've really got nothing good to say about Retribution. It has been a complete flop and just a failure from the beginning of just somebody in the production meeting saying to Vince of this idea. And he's like, let's do it. And then Vince and somebody says, well, what's the end game? And Vince is like, well, I don't know. Let's take him on a ride. Like, that's probably what was done. And there was no thinking or long-term planning for this group, but I digress.
Hey, let me say this, WWE podcast fans, true story, Revival actually finished a gauntlet match once with a flapjack as the finishing move. I'm just letting you know that. yes, it
fun
did
fact.
Happen.
Not
I think I made a video
fact.
On it a long time ago, but it was super funny. By the way, no roll-up wins today, I don't think.
I was very happy to see that, yes, yes.
Honestly, what else is there really to say about Retribution? They just booked them so terribly now, and I don't know how you recover. The only way I could see ever a way of them recovering is Mustafa Ali is not the leader, even though they kind of said he was, and have someone super legitimate as the leader that's working even more behind the scenes. And when I mean super legitimate, I mean something that makes no sense, something like a Brock Lesnar or a Batista or something that would at least legitify them a little bit. Because right now, they're lost in space, to be honest. And
by the way, where the hell are the rest of them? There was like 20 of them. And they kind of show up from here and there, but only five of them get contracts. I don't understand this.
They're
and,
working the WWE Raw Underground, man.
Yeah, they're in the casket with Raw Underground, 6 feet under. I mean, that's where they are. And also, like, the names they gave these people of T-Bar, Flapjack, I don't know, Slapjack, and who's the other guy? I can't remember the name, but the names of these people.
That's exactly the point.
Yeah. Like,
Rich, you see that?
Listen,
that's what you're saying.
But listen to even T-Bar and Slapjack, right? Like, don't they sound like bad 80s movie villains? Like, that's the name of a bad 80s movie villain. Like, an action-adventure bad name for a villain. It's just Ace. Awful. It's like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles bad villain. Like, I mean, it's, I don't know, man. God, all right. I'm gonna move on from Retribution.
You don't like Slapjack? I'll be honest. When I heard all the names, I heard T-Bar, almost pissed myself. When I heard Mace, I'm like, that doesn't have any ring whatsoever. Yes. It's like, what's your name, Mace? Like, you know, it doesn't make sense. I'll be honest. Slapjack, at least it sounds fun to say. At least it's fun. Like, you know how there's that crazy Steve or whatever they had on Impact or whatever for a little while there.
Yes.
At least it's fun to say Slapjack. And you know what? I'll give him that one. But T-Bar, come on.
T-Bar and Mace. It's just I can't take them seriously anymore. I mean, I just, I can't. I mean, this is bad. And you have a heel faction going against this heel faction on top of it. I don't know what they're doing. This hopefully just dies a very quick death. Like, just rip the Band-Aid off. And just pretend they don't exist on Monday night. Like, just pretend that they never happened. This never happened. That's what I would do. Just cut your losses.
1-4 The Fiend beat him 1-4. Like, out of, like, it was so easy for him. Like, it was like, who cares about Retribution? I know the Fiend is supposed to be a super villain, but my God, the Fiend took him out 1-4 in their Raw debut.
What's even crazier is if they were serious about this group, like they told us they were. Then wouldn't that be a moment that you'd build to of the Fiend being surrounded by Retribution instead of just immediately having that happen? Like, that would have been a hell of a moment if this was executed correctly and the Fiend surrounded. What's he going to do? Can they actually take out the Fiend? Instead, we're just kind of like, well, the Fiend took them all out, so I guess that's that. And then they lose their tag match, and we all just think we're going to get, you know, a WWE notification that tomorrow night or the next day that they all get future endeavored. I mean, like, that's that's the signal that they're sending to us with these individuals. But okay, let's get on to something a little more serious that doesn't make my blood boil. That's Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre. Hell in a Cell match, number 3 of the night, for the WWE Championship. I'm going to take a breath, and I'm going to let you take this one first.
Well, I'll say one thing. I thought it was hilarious, Randy Orton dressing up as a Retribution member to start off the fight. That was great. I thought the match had a pretty slow start again. I think this is a theme that with this pay-per-view, that they wanted to start off the matches slow and kind of ramp up. Again, I'm perfectly fine with that. I know other people don't really like that, but I've always been kind of fine with that. They had a couple interesting spots inside the Hell in a Cell, a couple of belly-to-belly suplexes. There was a countering of the RKO into a neck breaker. You know, then they had the whole him climbing up. The whole beautiful, beautiful Hell in a Cell, and it had one of the most iconic. Seriously, I cannot oversell this enough. That shot with them both standing up there, kind of the side angle with the kind of Titantrons type stuff that was happening up there in the red cage. I thought that was one of the coolest looking shots. That's going to be iconic. I don't know if it's not going to be iconic as it's an iconic match or anything like that. But I will always remember that shot. I thought it looked amazing with Randy Orton holding the red pipe there and Drew McIntyre putting his fists up. But I just love that they climbed up and they had something there. But the thing I didn't like was how fast they went down from there. It's like, oh, they got up there. And it's like, well, it's been like 2 seconds. We got our picture. Let's get down now. And then they had the little table spot on the outside, which I'm not a fan of that spot. Like, I've never been a fan of the half cage, you know, kind of them throwing himself out. I much would have enjoyed a Randy Orton RKO onto that table from the mid spot. Like, Matt, let me ask you before we continue on for the rest of it. Did you not feel an RKO was coming?
I thought it was coming. I was like, oh my God, here we go. But then I thought to myself, well, when is the last time Randy Orton took a truly bad, well, truly tough bump? I mean, Randy Orton's notorious for just kind of doing what's required and kind of getting through the match because he's so good he can almost fall asleep in it and still be good. And I thought, I don't know if Randy's going to do it. It may not actually be super safe, although the table that they landed on was super padded on top. This was a very clearly staged spot, and it's not only from the padded table that was there, very padded, and I understand why. I'm all about safety for the guys, and that's fine, but they also had, I mean, the hand and foot holes that have been in the cell for a while were very evident, and what made it kind of worse, what I haven't seen before, is where they were standing, there were perfect footholds where they would stand for that spot, so they didn't have to try to find their feet. I mean, it's like right there, I'm like, come on, guys. Like, I know they're making it safe, and it made it easy on them, and I'm all about that. But it just kind of took me out of the moment for that minute. But the spot on the table, yeah, I mean, Drew sold it well. He had the blood coming out of his mouth. That it wasn't overdone. It was just kind of like a chunk of blood. It was weird. But, answer that specific question. I was fine with that spot, but I was waiting for an RKO. Like, how they got up and they got down. Like, you're exactly right.
You know, I'm happy you mentioned the foothold thing, because I actually didn't see it in the old pay-per-views. So so that has been a thing.
Yeah, the holes they cut out in the Hell in a Cell, that's been there for quite a while. So they don't have to try to use the actual chain link mesh to climb, because their feet are so big. It's not, none of them are going to fit into those each individual section of the chain. So they cut out foot and hand holes.
I'm actually talking about more of, did you see that little like platform there?
Yes, that's
on?
What I'm talking about. That is what I'm saying. They have not. I have not seen that before. And that's when I was like, oh, really? Like, do we need to see that? It's clearly a spot that they just perfectly positioned them to go up exactly that side of the cell where there's only hand and foot holes there, and then come down only where there are hand and foot holes, and to land perfectly on the platform to land on a padded table. Like, it's so clearly a spot that they put in there. And that's really the only complaint I have about it. It's just kind of like a little bit of a take you out of the moment type of thing.
And Matt, personally, I thought when I saw those footholds, I was certain it was going to be an RKO, because I thought, like, you need to have kind of leverage to do that kind of an RKO spot. where you need to kind of get like a little bit of a jump and kind of like position properly for it. So I thought that's why they had it. But then when they just did a normal kind of table spot, I was fine. It looked fine. Everything was fine. It didn't make me mark out or anything. I did love the fact that they piped in Holy S. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I laughed. Yes.
I love the piped in Holy S chants. Oh, I thought it was so funny. I was cracking up. I'm like, okay, that was cool. And they really piped in the audio there. Yes, like they had a "This is awesome" in there. They really hyped it up, and it worked on me, I guess, because I was pretty hyped up. But you know, then they continued to battle on the outside. Now, I will say, when Drew McIntyre was kind of crawling, oh man, I loved it. I thought he sold it so well, the way he's slowly crawling, and Randy Orton kind of slithering around like his little style he always does. The little Viper style. And I'll say this, when I saw that, I'm like, oh my God, Drew McIntyre is winning. It's going to be a Randy counter, right? Or a Drew counter into a Claymore, 1-2-3. I'm like, that's what's happening, because, you know, it was so slow and methodical. And then he had that beautiful reverse, and then eventually the ending spot happened. I thought, and then, yeah, of course, Randy Orton is now the champion, and caught me, even though I predicted Randy Orton winning, it caught me a little off guard, because I felt like there were so many times where Randy could have won. It's like, why this time? But I guess this was the final conclusion. And yeah, Randy Orton is your WWE champion. What's your thoughts on the rest of the match and the finish?
So the rest of the match, I mean, yeah, it was good. I am 0-3 on predicting the McIntyre Orton matches, because I had thought in the first two, I was like, Orton's got to win. He's on fire as a heel. Then he's got to win the ambulance match. No, he lost the ambulance match, and he lost again. And then now I predicted McIntyre to win, and I had Orton win. So I am 0-3 on these two, and I cannot get it straight for whatever reason. I thought Orton should have been champion right from the beginning, because I thought as a hot heel, you don't get a heel that's that hot and that comes along very often. And for him to be champion, I think would have been fun for Drew in chase mode. So I don't think there was a need for Drew to keep it the last couple months. But it's not the worst thing. I love Drew as champion, so there's that too. But yeah, the ending of this match with Orton getting the RKO, one RKO was great. And one RKO and a finish, and the 1-2-3, having Orton go over essentially clean was surprising, that there was no hocus pocus, no handcuffs, no twist ties, whatever they want to do to make it like where Drew could say, well, he beat me, but there's no but here. He got beat by Randy Orton. So him as champion is going to be fun. I think it creates more interest than if Drew retained, because it's like, well, what's Randy going to say? What's Drew going to do to try to get the championship back? I think this is the right move, because, again, it creates way more buzz than just Drew retaining, which fans do like Drew as champion, but it doesn't create that, I got to tune in to see what happens next. But I should have known with the positioning of the Jey Uso-Roman Reigns match that there's something big they have planned at the end. Like, when they position that at the beginning, I'm like, really? This is at the very beginning of the pay-per-view? They've got something else that up their sleeve, even bigger than this match that they're going to do. And that's, I was like, oh, I should have chose Orton, but I loved it. And I think that now, with Edge returning somewhat shortly in the next month or so or two, that he has the championship on his mind. So I know we're looking a little bit ahead, but do you think that Edge challenges Orton for the championship? And if he does he win?
Well, that's the logical. That's the logical, kind of progression here. I think maybe you do something with Keith Lee first, potentially. I think maybe there's something that they could do. They could do something interesting there. But just to kind of give Edge a little bit more time. But, you know, that's going to happen. It's going to happen, the whole Edge versus Orton thing, because it's – I'll be honest, man. Backlash. I'm pretty sure it was Backlash. Man, that match, that the greatest match of all time, whatever hype, it was still probably one of my favorite matches of the year. And personally, I think that would just be fantastic again. And I would be okay with it. I'm not really sure if we need Edge back just this second. I think you could give some other opportunities. Kind of – I want to build up Orton again a little bit. I know he won, you know. I think that maybe another Drew McIntyre kind of shenanigans. I'm not saying a match, but I mean like something to get them away from each other would be great. I don't know. See, that's the thing, right? Like, Randy Orton won now. Like, what do you do, right? It's the same thing with Roman Reigns, right? Now, Roman Reigns now won. Now, what do you do? Because you know Roman's not going to lose till WrestleMania, right? And with Randy Orton, you have such a natural rival with Edge, but he's hurt, right? So, like, what do you do?
That's the key, because what do you really go to a fourth Orton versus McIntyre match? I mean, I guess you could, but you're going to have fans immediately go, oh, again? Once you get to the third match, people tend to go, okay, I'm done. And it feels like, I mean, we're going through the 18th match with Rey Mysterio and Dominic and Seth Rollins. And it feels, they did the last year too with who was it? Baron Corbin and Roman Reigns. It felt like that match and that rivalry just never ended. And so I think fans get antsy around the third time where they're like, okay, you know, three is like the magic number. You push to four, people are going to start complaining. Even though Randy Orton and Drew, I think, do a very good job and they have great chemistry together. I don't know if you go to a fourth. Do they dare go to a fourth, or do they just throw it up in the air and go, well, it's Survivor Series time, guys. That means you need to care about red, you need to care about blue, and you need to care about black and gold, which I think they're going to do.
But that's exactly – it is Survivor Series, right? And so that's kind of an out, right? It's kind of an out because, you know, Survivor Series is the whole red-blue type thing, but it's not always a 1v1 type thing. I think they could just do a nice, beautiful – kind of just match them up with a bunch of people, match the other ones with a bunch of people, and kind of do some fun stuff there. But like I said, I need some shenanigans now. Like, I need something different, because you can't have the same match again. But I want to, you saw Drew's look, right? Like, he didn't look like a guy that the end of the show, he doesn't care anymore. He looked like he was pissed off at Randy Orton because he lost. He wants to talk about Randy Orton again. So there needs to be a kind of a step off point. I don't know what it is. Maybe, just maybe, you have a beautiful NXT debut, something that people have been begging for God knows how long, in Adam Cole, you know, the Undisputed Era type thing. Like, is it finally time to do something with NXT, bringing up some big storyline from there, or is it just, you know, moving on to whatever?
No, I think it's time, because like you said, you look around, like, what is next? Where does Randy Orton go beyond a rematch with Drew and beyond Survivor Series, which we're all not going to care about brand rivalries because they mean nothing? I don't know. I mean, yeah, NXT call-ups would seem to make sense right now, even though we say call-ups, but yet they're supposed to be a legitimate third brand, and I think they are. I think, you know, while we say call-ups, again, it's, I don't know if it's truly call-ups anymore, because a lot of stars like Kevin Owens, I know, could benefit by going back to NXT.
Correct.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, yes, it could be time, because it may be time to really bring up somebody that is, like you said, Undisputed Era. Adam Cole definitely would be a good fit. Something would change. It would change things up, make it feel fresh, other than just kind of the same Drew and Randy story that's been going on for a few months now. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and that's it. That's the whole thing about this pay-per-view as a whole. I think it was satisfying. Like, now, you know, after going over and thinking about it and talking about it with you, you know, I was super hyped, maybe best. You know, maybe I'll knock it down just an inch. I would maybe make it a 9, not a 9.5. After thinking about it, you know, there was a couple of things that you brilliantly brought up that made me did double check and maybe double think about it a little bit. But at the end of the day, I thought it was just an incredible pay-per-view. I think the fact that there were so little matches and there was so kind of an impact with a lot of the matches, I feel like it definitely does elevate the company and the actual product as a whole. And I love that they did that. And I do want to give you a big shout out, Matt, for once again having me on here. It's always a pleasure doing this with you. It's kind of cool. We're doing this now. It looks like every pay-per-view, which I'm all down for, if as long as you want me. And I just, once again, Matt, man, you're a gentleman and a scholar, my friend, and I appreciate it.
And you just Michael Scott me there from The Office? All right.
I did.
Yes, awesome. I love that show. But yeah, no, I appreciate it. As I said, this is an ongoing relationship for every pay-per-view. I'm down for it as well. Survivor Series is next up in 4 weeks, so you are absolutely welcome. But before you go, of course, any plugs, shout-outs, anything you'd like, this is the time.
Hey, well, I appreciate it. It's not every day that I get my own little plug spot, but you know what? I've honestly, nothing too crazy. I just go check out my channel, The Botch Guy on YouTube. Like I said, I do reactions and parodies and botch videos and breakdowns and stuff like that, but most of my channel, it's extremely heavily community oriented. Like, I make daily community posts. I talk to people. I know them at an individual level, not like, I don't know where they live or anything like that, but I get to know people specifically. And I do live streams like pretty much every other day. And it's something that Matt, you, I believe you joined once or twice before and you seem to enjoy. And I just want to, again, thank you for this, because I'm going to try to drag as many people over here to see your amazing podcast, because it really is.
You drag them over, even if they're on kicking and screaming. To know, damn it, you're going to watch it. And you can also count on me. If you think a pay-per-view is really, really good, guess what? I'm going to bring it down a peg or two. I'm going to tell you why it's why you shouldn't love it the way you do. But anyway, thanks so much for coming on. And we'll be doing this again in just a few short weeks.
Sounds good, brother. Thank you so much.
All righty, man. Take care.